This podcast is part of the MyPodcast.com network. Go online right now and get your very own 100% free podcast, MyPodcast.com.
There you go.
There you go, yeah.
Or just pretend that dead dogs are sleeping. All right, you got your Bibles. Go to Genesis. Chapter 37. What do you mean, Genesis? Genesis 37. not always easy to do. Not always easy to do. But you come to church. You come to church and you hear somebody preaching or you hear somebody teaching, and they can almost make it sound like, well, if you're a Christian or if you follow God, then everything's wonderful. I mean, I think if you listen to some of the TV preachers, if you live your life right or you send in enough money, then you won't ever have any trouble. And so it becomes difficult. Honest, when you come in, when you have to deal with your life and you know where you've come from and you know what you've done and you know where you've been and you have some fear about where you're headed, it's difficult to turn loose that and think, well, man, I can be a part of this kind of a group. I can be a part of a church because they're different. They don't know. They don't have the same problems I have, or they haven't done the same things I've done, or they're just better than I am, right? You have those kind of feelings. We've talked about it for months now, and we're going to keep talking about it for a while. One of the things that we've got to deal with as a church, and one of the things I think we have to deal with as people, is how we start to compare ourselves with other people, or how we start to think or worry that other people are comparing themselves with us. We got to stop that foolishness. We got to stop that. We are no better than anybody else, right? And in this particular group, that's pretty obvious, right? When we just start talking about our stuff, have we got some stuff? In fact, you know, it's like that old lady said, oh, I'm glad they have a church for people like that. Those kind of people. Well, this is us kind of people, right? But here's what happens to us is we start, it's not so much, I don't think we've struggled with it, and I hope we always keep a watch on this. We don't compare ourselves to the people in that we think we're better than them. What we tend to do is do what? We're not worthy to be around those other kind of people. Now, when you really feel that way, how do you perceive their reaction to you? Let's say you're at a place and you walk past somebody and they don't even talk to you. They just keep walking. Whether they meant it or not, how do you feel?
Rejected.
They just rejected me. They just said, I don't want anything to do with you. And you, if you really take that on this logical trip, where do you end up? Those people think they're better than me, and they think those people
are better
than me, or those people are looking down on me, or those people think I'm going to hell, and guess what?
Correct.
I'm not going back there, and sometimes I even believe them. I think, well, that's probably true, so I'll just slip off over here in a corner somewhere and die. I am impressed over and over again as we read through the Bible the number of people who God used that just had major issues, major problems, major sins, however way you say it, but major problems. Just so we can get back on the same page, tell me somebody that you know in Scripture that had a major problem, a major sin, the kind of thing that would have caused people to look down on them, and yet God still used them. Give me an example. Some of the maybe it's something that we've already discussed, some that you've thought of that we haven't discussed. How about David? King David probably is one of those examples that's used over and over again because he did not only a shameful thing that a lot of people are tempted to do, and so therefore it carries a lot of weight when people think about what's really when somebody does something really, really wrong. Well, he committed adultery, but he also murdered somebody. And so honest, if you think about it, what did he deserve? He deserved to die. If they had followed the law of Moses in that in his situation, what would have happened to him? He would have been stoned to death twice. Right? They'd had two piles of stones on him, one for the adultery, one for the murder. And yet, what did God do with him? God used him. God used him how? One is to defeat his enemies. What else? He was the great, 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 great grandfather of Jesus. What else? I called him a man after his own heart and used him to teach other sinners what? That when you've sinned and you can't breathe because of your sin, God can still use you too. God can still count you as someone who has a heart after him. So God can still use you to do good for other people. If it's nothing more than to say, if I can forgive that guy, I can forgive you. Give me somebody else. Somebody that did something that was so shameful in church, we'd have gone, oh my, I can't believe he did that. And we'd want to stand back away from him. Though God forbid we ever do that to anybody. Jacob. How about Jacob? That's funny. When you're a little kid and you talk about Jacob, how's the story come out? Poor, well, if you get to that Leah part, yeah, poor Jacob. But what do you think about the story of Jacob? When you're a little kid, what do you think about Jacob?
Everything turns out great for him.
He's a hero. In fact, people name their kids Jacob, right? And if you've got a relative who's named Jacob, or if that's your name, I'm not saying this about you, but the name Jacob actually means liar, cheater, deceiver, schemer, you know? So when they were calling him by name, they were assigning him a character, and he lived up to that character, didn't he? And yet what did God do with Jacob? He changed his heart, changed his walk, gave him the limp, remember, and changed his life. He used him to become the man that was going to be the father of all those people that we came to know as the children of Israel, the children of Jacob, right? All right, give me somebody else. Huh? How about Saul? Just the apostle that became the apostle Paul. What was he like when you first meet him? In fact, you didn't want to meet him because he'd have killed you. But what did God do with him?
Changed his name.
Changed his life, changed his name, and then changed him in such a way that he started teaching people about Jesus instead of killing people about Jesus. All right, somebody else.
Samson.
And Samson's one of those, if you and I met Samson, he would not have been one of our buddies. Those of us who went to church and were told, you don't have non-Christian friends because non-Christian friends are evil companions, corrupt good morals. And evil companions do corrupt good morals. The Bible says it. That settles it. That's the truth. But we were almost told you couldn't have a friend that was not a Christian, so much so that... Now, which was real funny, okay? Let me just be real honest. It's real funny. Our preachers would preach it, and our teachers would teach it. You don't have friends that are non-Christians. And we'd go, oh, you can't have friends that are non-Christians, okay? I lived in a town like maybe 12 people, okay?
Well, what they were saying is you can't have friends that are not Church of Christ.
They couldn't. If they didn't go to our church, then they couldn't be. That's right. They couldn't be friends. But what else they were teaching us is, and they said, you can only date somebody that's a Christian. Well, in my class, there was only one girl in our class. Oh, thank you. Oh, I hope this is not being recorded. Anyway, it was not a good deal. Anyway, the point was, we decided, were we friends with folks at school?
Yes.
Yes. Did we date other girls or other guys that were in school? Yeah, they weren't Christians. Yeah, we did that all the time. But because our preachers were saying it and because our teachers were saying it, what did we do? You didn't bring them to church, because if you brought them to church, what were you doing? You were admitting that you were a friend to a person who was a sinner. What an amazing thing happened to me, and it was in college, when I read the phrase in the Gospels that Jesus was a friend of sinners. I remember having a major crisis in my understanding of God's Word when I read that phrase, because I had been taught, you are friends to only people who are Christians. To be a friend of a person who's not a Christian means you're not being like Jesus. And yet Jesus was a friend of sinners. Ooh, it had me fouled up. Well, it's not just things we were taught. Most of the times it's things we lived. When we've done things that we're ashamed of, or when we've done things that other people know about and make us feel ashamed, we stop thinking in terms that God can take care of us, God can still use us. I want to tell you the story. You know the story. It's Joseph. But we've read the story and we've seen the flannel graphs. But do you understand that Joseph was placed in a position by his own father where it was terrible. He was treated as he was favored by his father. Do you remember? What does that do to you? Now, you always like the thought when you're the one being favored. But honestly, for the teacher to call you their pet, or to treat you like they were their pet, or for your parents to treat you as if you were their favorite, what did they open your life up to? Horrible, horrible treatment. How did the brothers treat him? Daddy loved Joseph more than the other boys. Now, I think I know why. I think it's Joseph was the first son of his beloved, beautiful wife, Rachel. So he favored Joseph. And he showed that favoritism by giving him a special coat. So what's worse than favoring one is to give him a sissy coat that all the other brothers can punch him in the arm every time they see it. Yeah. I mean, this is not a good deal. This is, what does it produce in Joseph? Initially, anyway, what does it produce in Joseph? Joseph begins to have these little dreams. And so rather than telling his father, Daddy, I'm having these dreams and this is something unusual. No, he tells his brothers and his dad, one of these days y'all are all going to bow down to me. Now, was he telling the truth? Yes. But how did the brothers react to that deal? Your daddy loves you more than he loves us. You got a special coat and now you're telling us that you're going to be better than us? Strike three, you are out, right? So while we read this story, and we talk in terms of, here's this special coat and he had these special dreams. Take off the coat, take out the dreams. Take off the coat and take out the dreams. You know what you're describing? You're describing a child that's grown up in an abusive, neglectful situation. And some of you in here know exactly what that feels like. And you might have been the one favored, or you might have been the one not favored. It doesn't matter, because either way, what was happening? You were being neglected. If the parent favored you, you were being neglected. If the parent rejected you, you were being neglected. So what does that build in you? What does that do to you? What? You start to resent. And you start to resent the parent. And you start to resent everybody else around you. And if you happen to be the favored one, well, that's not just the favored one. Who else do you resent? I've already heard it once, but I want to hear it again. You start to resent yourself. Why? Because you believe somewhere deep, deep down inside you, the reason my daddy's treating me this way, the reason my mama's treating me this way is because of something I did, something I said. It's incredible the amount of stuff that they tell you and teach you when you do any kind of work on counseling. Incredible amount of stuff that you read on how children who have gone through a divorce, have seen their families divorce, the kind of burden of guilt they carry. Now, if you're one of those children, you know what that's like. If you're one of those people that's put your children through it, you understand something of what that's like. Bottom line is, that kid's being neglected, and therefore he feels responsible. All right. If you keep reading the story, you know what happens. The brothers decide, we're going to get rid of this guy. Okay, Dad says, I want you to go see your brothers. I want you to take them this bread and stuff. And so Joseph goes off to see his brothers. They can't speak anything kindly about him. And Dad has set that up. This is one lonesome boy. And now he's going to see his brothers. What are they thinking about him while he's coming? We're going to take care of him. He's a brat. We're going to get rid of him. In fact, they plan on doing what? You read the text, they're planning on killing him. So when they get him, they grab him and put him where? Look, it says they throw him in a cistern. What's a cistern?
Sewer.
Yeah, big hole. They threw him in it. Tell me what that's like. We never discussed it in Bible class. Joseph always, they just put him in a cistern. So where is he? How'd he get to the bottom of it? Did they lower him down with a rope?
Of course.
Did they form a human chain so he could crawl down? No. What did they do to him when they grabbed him?
They threw
him in. I don't know that I can describe it, but some of you know something about being mistreated by your siblings, by being mistreated by your parents. Not just emotionally, but physically. These guys are not treating... This is not easy. They're hurting him. There's pain on him. Now, the moment that pain starts happening, what's going on inside his head? Tell me what's going on inside Joseph. He's being a self-centered little show-off, especially in their perception of him. And now they've got him where they want him, and they throw him in a pit. Now what's going through his head? These brothers who couldn't say anything good about him are now saying, we're going to kill him. What's going on in his head? Nothing. He's got his little coat. He's making sure he's dusted off. He's singing, Rock of Ages, clever. What's going on inside him? Is he scared? Is he sad? Is he worried? Is he sick? I mean, there's all kinds of stuff going on inside of him, right? If you stopped his life right then, stop right then, freeze frame it. Joseph, would you like to tell me how much you value your life, the rest of your life? If you could trade the rest of your life for anybody else, would you? Oh, you bet. Because what does he know about his life at that moment? His life is over. It's done. It's over. It's not over. Reuben decides not to kill him. Keeps the other brothers from killing him. So they do the next best thing. They sell him into slavery. They sell him to the Ishmaelites. Lots of good secondary lessons here. But they sell him as a slave to be carried off into Egypt. Now, folks, do slaves ride the camels?
No.
So where do the slaves walk? In front of the camels? Do they leave them free or do they tie them up? My imagination is they tie him up, tie his hands at least, and he walks. Check it out on the map sometime. Check it on the map. He walks from there all the way to Egypt behind a camel with every step away from his brothers. Oh, by the way, they took his coat. He didn't have his little pretty coat anymore. He didn't have daddy to go tell anymore. He didn't have big brother Reuben to even kind of sort of protect him anymore. He's walking away from everything he's ever known, and he's following a camel. Stop. Free frame his life right now. Tell me what he thinks about his life.
He wishes that it was over.
He wishes it was over. He wishes he could trade with anybody, right? There are people sitting in this room. There are people sitting in this room. That had you asked me at any moment in my life, at certain moments of my life, Would you be willing to trade with anybody? Yeah. Would you wish your life was over? Yes. Joseph had that kind of life. So he started off favored, but where did he end up? Dragging behind a camel all the way to Egypt. He gets sold as a slave. Let's read the story. Chapter 39. Joseph was taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials and the captain of the guard, bought him. That's got to be a real self-esteem boost, right? He bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. And the Lord was with Joseph and he prospered. Stop. Can you be neglected? Can you be abused by your father, neglected by your parents, rejected by your family, and still have the Lord with you? Can you lose your coat, lose your family, lose what you believed is a normal life, and still be blessed by God? Can you be the most experienced camel tracker in the world and still be blessed by God? Yeah. Because see, God doesn't look at your coat. God doesn't look at your parents. God doesn't look at your brothers. God doesn't look at your family. He looks at you. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. Now, was he still a slave? Was he still far away from home? Was he still hated by his brothers? Yes, yes, and yes. But did God bless him? Can you be now? Are we hearing the lesson? Can you be mistreated by everybody in the world that you know and love and that should love you? Can you be mistreated beyond imagination and still be loved by God? Now, does that mean that mom and dad are going to make things right? Does that mean brothers are going to make things right? Does that mean that the job opportunities and your bank accounts, everything's going to be all right? No. But can you still prosper? Can God still bless you? Yes. And so when the master saw that the Lord was with him, he gave him success in everything he did. Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted his care to everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So he left in Joseph's care everything he had. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Now Joseph was well built and handsome. Oh, I love it when the Lord's just real plain. He's about to tell us a story, and so what does he let us know? Joseph was well built and handsome. Notice it does not say C-Rex here, right? And Joseph was well built and handsome, and after a while his master's wife took notice of Joseph. Now stop a second. When the Bible says took notice, what does that mean? She wants to flirt with him, and that's a nice way to say it, right? She wants to flirt. And so she, being the boss's wife, approaches him and says, come to bed with me. Were they taking about nap time? No. We're adults, right? We know what was going on. Now, I love this. I love this next part. Look at verse 8 and circle the first word of verse 8. What does it say? But. But he refused. Now, what were all the reasons he should have? What were all the reasons he could have? I've been mistreated all my life. Everything, I ain't never had anything like. I'm just, and my parents and my brothers, and they took my coat. And when you start feeling sorry for yourself, when you start looking at your life and you start feeling like everything's gone wrong against you, what do you tend to do? You start to magnify everything, how bad it is. What do you tend to do? You start to justify your actions because I deserve this because everything else has been horrible for me. Well, who cares? I mean, where's Dad? He's a camel trek back that away. Where's the brothers? Are they going to tell on me? Nope. They're the ones that sold me down here. He's had nothing go his way. They even took his coat. But instead of blaming them, he says, he refused them and said, with me in charge, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owes, he has entrusted to me, to my care. No one is greater in the house I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. Now stop. So if I'm learning from Joseph how to deal with horrible situations, stuff, bad stuff's been piled on me, man. My parents, my brothers, my coat, my life. I'm a slave. I was a son, and now I'm a slave. I was a favored son, and now I'm a slave. So what does Joseph teach me? The first thing he does when he refuses her is what? He acknowledges his place with his master. He remembers who he is. I'm a slave. I'm not the master. I'm the slave. I'm not the master. Keep reading. He said, look at that next phrase. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? So now, not only does he recognize his master, he recognizes what? His place with God. Remember that. Pay attention to that. And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed. So he recognized he had the right to say no. I don't know how to say it any more plain than what we've said it already, but let's say it again. I don't know how many times I've heard people get involved in sexual sins, and their answer would be eventually when they went to talk about it, well, I just couldn't tell him no, or I just couldn't tell her no. Meaning, I had no control in the matter, or I couldn't say no because I didn't want to hurt their feelings. As if their feelings are the most important thing. In his mind, God, Master, and even himself, his self-preservation was more important than her feelings. It was a bunch of years before I ever noticed this. She saw him, noticed him, wanted him to go to bed, and he said no. What did she do? Did she give up? Look at that, verse 10. And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, what does she say to him every day? Every day he comes to bring her breakfast. Every day he comes to do the laundry. Every day that he's going to do the windows. What does she say to him every day? Come to bed with me. And there's no need to let your imagination, but I don't know how you keep your imagination from going there. She wasn't just saying, come to bed with me, you understand. She was trying to get him in bed with her. But he refused to go to bed with her. Now look at the next phrase, because the next phrase is a key. The next phrase is a key. He refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. Why? Why? What? Bible talks about it. You get too close to the fire, what happens? You're going to get burned. He tells us how to deal with that kind of sin. I think what's impressive to me, that's impressive to me, but what's really impressive to me is the fact that he had every reason in the world to do this and could have justified it. My mom and dad aren't here. Nobody will ever know. Look what's happened to my life. And I deserve some kind of pleasure. I deserve some kind of pleasure. And yet he remembers his place with his master. He remembers his place with God. Well, finally, you know the story. What happens? Verse 11, one day he went about his house to attend to his duties. None of the household servants were inside. So she caught him by the cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. Now stop a second. That's flannel graph 101. She grabbed him by the cloak. What does that mean she did? See your flannel graph, your little Bible school person. She grabbed him by the coat. She was behind him and she grabbed him at the shoulders and held it out so he could slip out of it and run away, right? When she said, it says she got him by the cloak, she caught him by his cloak. What does that mean?
She'd been aggressive.
She'd been very aggressive. She is grabbing, yeah. She was going to make this happen one way or the other, right? So what did it take for him to get out of his cloak? Oh, excuse me. I'd like to get out of my cloak, please. He had to fight her. He had to push her off. Had to struggle. Had to fall on the ground. Had to be embarrassed, right? He was doing things to get away from her. He was acting, I tell you what, he was acting almost as if he was afraid of her. Was there reason to be afraid of her? Yeah, she was fixing to take something much more important than him, than even his right eye or his right hand. If she'd have been saying, "Honey, come here, I'm going to pluck out your right eyeball. Here's my pair of pliers I got ready." What would he? How hard would he have fought to keep his eye? Yeah. He'd have done that. He was protecting his heart. He was protecting his soul. And he ran out of the house. If you were watching a movie of this, in our culture, and the boss's wife, good-looking lady, let's say, we'd have her played by some mature, good-looking woman. I think Tim's telling us more than he wants us to know. But all right, we got Catherine Zeta-Jones, and she walks up to young, healthy, handsome star.
George Clooney.
I think. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I shouldn't have gone this way with people in here. But anyway. So, here comes Catherine Zeta-Jones, and she grabs George Clooney. If George Clooney had fought and run, what would everybody in the theater have done? Laughed or booed? Because we have come to believe that if you're a real man, what do you do? If you're a real man, you give in. If you're a real man, you take care of business. If you're a real man, what do? You run for your life. You run to protect your soul. Did he have reason to do it? Had a jillion good reasons to sleep with this woman because, man, his life had been horrible up to that point. Abused by his family. Separated from them. Lonesome. We use those kind of things to justify what we do all the time, and yet he refuses. He runs and leaves her standing there. Well, she's got his coat in his hand and he's run off. Now she's mad, so she calls the servant and said, "He tried to rape me and we need to throw him in jail." So they threw him in jail. So tell me, how did it work out for him? Say, time out. Freeze frame his life. Dick. What do you think now, Joseph? How'd that work out for you? I mean, buddy, you had a coat of many colors. You were a favored son. You ended up in a pit, walking behind a camel. You ended up as a slave. You finally got to be a trusted slave, but still a slave. Boss's wife wants to be with you. A little special time with the boss, and you wouldn't do it. And now look where you are. Now you're in jail. How did it work out for him? So you stop your life at any given moment. What might you think? I did the right thing, and look where it got me. I did the right thing, and what happened? I'm in worse shape than I am now. I don't. Did you notice? He just lost his second coat. Guy has trouble keeping up with these coats, all right? They put him in jail, but now look at this. Verse 20. Last sentence, but while Joseph was there in prison, verse 21, the Lord was with him, showed him kindness, and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. Can everything in your life be going wrong and God still be making sure everything's all right? Now that's sometimes, because we look at life, we look at it for right now. Boy, things are going bad for me right now. Things are going horrible for me right now. Man, I just don't think anything's ever going to be any good anymore. So that's how we reason. What's God doing? He's not looking right now. Wait till tomorrow. Wait till the next day. See what's happening. Look at God go to work. He showed him kindness. Bert, the warden, put Joseph in charge of all those who were in prison. And he was made responsible for all that was done there. Okay, so now he is not a favored son. He is not a favored slave. He's a favored prisoner. What's the common word? Favored. God blessed him as a son. God blessed him as a slave. And now God blessed him as a prisoner. And the warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. Keep reading. Sometime later, the cupbearer and the baker, the king of Egypt, offended their master, the king of Egypt. Pharaoh was angry with his two officials, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and he put them in custody of the house of the captain of the guard. It was the same prison where Joseph was confined. Keep reading. We're just reading the text. The captain of the guard assigned them to Joseph, and he attended to them. After they had been in custody for some time, each of the two men, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were being held in prison, had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own. Now when Joseph came to them the next morning, he saw that they were dejected. So he asked Pharaoh's official, who were in custody with him in the master's house, "Why are your faces so sad today?" He's a good guy. Nobody's asking him, "How you doing, buddy? You going to borrow my coat?" No, nobody's asking him. But he's asking them. He said, "How are your faith? Why are you doing okay today?" He said, "Well, we both had dreams, and neither one of us know how to interpret them." Now, does Joseph have any idea how to do dreams? Yeah, remember, he learned this back as a kid. So he said, "Don't interpretations belong to the Lord? Tell me your dreams." So the chief cupbearer told Joseph his dream. He said, "In my dream I saw a vine in front of me, and there was a vine, there were three branches, and as it budded, it blossomed, and the clusters ripened into grapes. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand. I squeezed the grapes and gave the cup to Pharaoh and put it in his hand." What does that mean? Well, Joseph said, "Here's what it means. The three branches are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your position. And you'll put Pharaoh's cup in his hand just as you used to do when you were his cupbearer." Now, how does this guy like this dream? "I like this. I like this guy. Joseph, you're my man." Right? Now, he said, verse 14, that Joseph, not an unwise child. He says, "But when all goes well with you, would you please remember me? And show me kindness and maybe mention me to the Pharaoh and get me out of this prison." So does he like being in prison? Have we got this idea that Joseph is just enamored with pits and being a slave and being a prisoner? Like, is he glowing in the dark down there going, "Oh, I love this"? Is he singing, "Spoonful of sugar, have some medicine, go down"? No. This is not Pollyanna. This is not whatever that lady name is, what's her name? Mary Poppins. This is prison. He's been a slave. He's been in prison. He doesn't like it. He says, "Listen, would you remember me to the Pharaoh and get me out of here? For I was forcefully carried off from the land of the Hebrews." And, ooh. And even here, I have done nothing to deserve being put in a dungeon. So what's this like? It's the pits. That's right. Verse 16. When the chief baker saw that Joseph... Now, what's this? This baker is waiting. He said when he found out that Joseph had given a favorable interpretation to the cupbearer, he said, "Ooh, I had a dream too." He said, "Okay, tell me your dream." He said, "On my head there were three baskets of bread. In the top baskets were all kinds of baked goods for the Pharaoh." Excuse me. "But the birds were eating them out of the basket on my head." Joseph said, "Well, this is what this means. 3 baskets or 3 days. And within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift off your head." Notice he didn't say lift up your head. He said he will lift off your head and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat your flesh. Not a way to win friends and influence people, but it was the truth. And now the third day of Pharaoh's birthday, he gave a feast for all of his officials. He lifted up the heads of the king, the chief cupbearer, and the chief baker in the presence of his officials. He restored the chief cupbearer to his position so that once again he put the cup in Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker just as Joseph had said in his interpretation. Okay, hang on a second. So what's going to happen? If you haven't read the story, what's going to happen? Cupbearer's going to remember, right? Cupbearer's going to remember, get him out of jail. He's going to get a camel, and he's going to go back, and he's going to deal with his brothers, right? Wrong. And the chief, verse 23, "And the chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph. He forgot him." He forgot him. What has Joseph had go wrong so far? What has Joseph had go wrong? Start listing them for me.
His brothers threw him.
Start with before his brothers. Dad abused him. You don't treat a child like that. That's abuse. Brothers hated him. Brothers tried to kill him. Stole his coat. Sold him into slavery. He all the way to Egypt. All right. Got to Egypt. He became a slave. God blessed him, of course, but he was still a slave. Boss's wife tried to bust a move on him, and what'd he do? He got sent to jail. Right. He got sent to jail. What kind of jail? And by the way, he lost his other coat. All right. And now he's finally done a favor for some fellows, and they carry the news back to Pharaoh, and they're going to get him out of jail, right? And they forget him. Tell me, how could he? What would he be thinking right now? What could he be thinking right now?
Why bother?
Why bother? Look what I've done. I've done nothing. All I did was tell my brothers what my dreams meant. All I did was do what was right by Pharaoh, Potiphar's wife. And all I did was I took care of these men and told them the truth about these dreams. And yet every time he's done right, it seems like it's ended up wrong. It's worse than at the first. Here's what happens. 2 years later, Pharaoh has a dream. Dreams about these 7 cows and these 7 ears of corn, and there's the big fat ones and they get eaten by 7 skinny ones, and then there's these 7 fat ears that get eaten by these 7 skinny ears, and he doesn't know what that means, and it bothers him, and he doesn't know what to do. And finally the cupbearer goes, "Well, duh, there's a fella in jail that, by the way, that helped me when I was in trouble. Now maybe he could help you." Now it's interesting, and if you don't notice it, make a note here. If Joseph had gotten out of jail when the cupbearer got out of jail, where would he have been when the Pharaoh needed him? He might have been back in the promised land whipping on his brothers, right? He could have found him another set of camels taking him back the other way, right? But where is he? He's in jail. So do they know right where he is? Yes. Now watch what happens. Pharaoh tells him the dream. Said, I tell you what's going to happen. Said, you're going to have 7 years of plentiful here in Egypt, but then there's going to be 7 years of famine. And if you don't prepare, those 7 years of famine are going to swallow up these 7 good years. Pharaoh says, man, that sounds like a wise thing to do. Why don't you become my number one best buddy and sit up here on the throne right next to me and become my foreman? And guess what Pharaoh gives him? He gives him his coat. And Joseph starts wearing the coat of a Pharaoh. And he starts working out these great plans. Now here's what's amazing. He works out all these great plans and they save up food for 7 years. And they have more food than they can imagine in 7 years. But then the famine hits and the whole world starts coming to Egypt to eat. Guess who comes to Egypt to pick up some food? Joseph's brothers. Now there's a great little story about how he works it, but when they come before him to ask for food, do they recognize that he's Joseph? No, because he's grown up now and he's not some little boy who wears sitsy coats. He's wearing Pharaoh's coat, and I imagine he's decked out kind of like a Pharaoh would look. And so they don't recognize him, and he won't let them see that it's him, but he knows it's them, and they bow down to him. And what does he remember? God told me that it's going to happen, and I was trying to tell you guys that. Finally, he shows himself to them, and they're amazed. Oh, my, we're sorry. Oops, we didn't know you were going to be somebody special, or we'd have treated you nicer, right? I want you to go to chapter 50, and we'll tie the knot. You got to read verses 19. If you've never marked down Genesis 50, verse 19 and 20, you need to circle them. Because here's what happens. Here's the whole reason the story, I think, is in the Bible. Joseph's dad, Jacob, those brothers' dad, he dies. And he tells them, before he dies, he said, you guys need to go make up with Joseph. Well, after he dies, the brothers figure out, we better go do what the old man said. So they come and say, you know, our dad told us to come tell you we're real sorry for what we did to you when we tore up your coat and chunked you in that pit and sold you into slavery. Just kidding, you know, like brothers. I love verse 19 when Joseph says, do not be afraid. Am I in the place of God? I want you to pay attention. Does he recognize his place with God again? When he was faced with a temptation with the woman, he put himself in the proper relationship with God. When he was faced with the interpretation of those dreams in the prison, he put himself in a proper relationship with God. When he could have taken vengeance, because he is number one man in Pharaoh's world of Egypt, and he could have taken vengeance on them, he put himself in a proper relationship with God and said, I am not in the place of God. You don't have to be afraid of me. But don't you look at the next thing. You intended it for harm. Now, I'm going to give you a little bit more about that in just a second, but I want you to read the next thing. You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. Now, some of us have not been Bible students for a while, so this may go way past you pretty quick. That's fine. Don't worry about it. Just remember, in spite of what men, family, strangers, prisoners, what they did to Joseph, Joseph hung on to God. And where did he end up? Funny little coat of a boy. No, we're in the coat of Pharaoh. Now, did you see it coming? Nope. Could you put that on your plans for the day? Things to do list, become Pharaoh's buddy. No, would never happen. This is only the way God works in your life. What you have to do is just make sure you stay in connection with God. You just keep doing things God's way and see what happens. But I want you to notice, he said, you meant it for evil, but God intended it for good so that many lives could be saved. God promised that Abraham would have a son that would crush the serpent's head and take us back into the presence of God. God promised Isaac that he would have a son that would do the same thing. God promised Jacob that he would have a son that would do the same thing. And finally, a wicked son of Jacob's named Judah has a son whose name is Perez. And that Perez happens to be the great-great-great-granddaddy of a fellow named Boaz, who spotted a good-looking Moabite woman named Ruth and married her. And their great-great-grandbaby's name was David, the king, who is the great-great-great-great-grandfather of Jesus. The life that God wanted saved was a fellow named Judah, who was going to have an illegitimate baby named Perez. God wanted that baby Perez saved. Why? Because that's how Jesus got to the world. Now, would Joseph have rather had a chance just to live a normal life? I'm sure. But if you ask him now, with all of God's plan in front of him, with all of God's plan in front of me, Joseph, would you rather just live that favored little spoiled boy wearing that funny little coat the rest of your life? Or would you have rather saved the great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather of Jesus? What would he have chosen? The latter one. Even though it was going to cost him such pain and such heartache. I don't know all that God's doing in your life. I don't know all that God's doing in mine. But I know this. It's not based on how your family treats you. It's not based on how your brothers treat you. It's not based on how strangers treat you. It's not based on how your boss or the boss's wife treats you. Everybody in the world may be against you, and your life may have horrible things, one after another, after another, after another. But what's God doing? In everybody's life, what's God doing? He is working something out for good. I may not see it right now. Joseph couldn't see it. But in the end, was he able to recognize the good? Yeah, we will too. And I hope I can see it before. I hope I see it before the end. But if I can't see it before the end, what do I have to do? Hang on and be faithful until I get to the end. So, put yourself in the right place with God and let God work it out for good. And if people have mistreated you, I'm sorry. I really am. I don't take that lightly. I know something about that. But they're not the ones that matter. They're the ones that are wrong. God's the one that's right. And in those times where you've made wrong decisions and you've done the same kind of things, I understand. You get rid of those things. You acknowledge those things. You turn from those things. And let God keep doing in you what's right. And at the end of your life, He'll say to all of us, or we'll be able to say about Him, all those folks that mistreated us meant it for wrong, meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. Hang on to God until you get to that point where you can see that good. All right, let's pray. Father, thank you for today.